Okay, we're in the middle of chapter 34. It's what page is that on the bottom numbers?
155, 156.
And we're at the two dots towards the top of the page. Last word of the line is v'im, and in the English, that's it. And if, on the first paragraph over there. We had mentioned before that the prophets and the patriarchs were a vehicle for conveying godliness. And now, since the base of Mikdash has been destroyed, if we want to do such a thing like that, so then go learn halacha. The things are in the Shulchan Aruch convey the divine will, and then we will be serving Hashem truly that way. And we then doing so, we make this world a dwelling place for God. And even if that means that a person is learning only one chapter in the morning, one chapter in the evening. So now he says, "Ve'im yarchev Hashem le'aid." If Hashem gives them more time to learn more than just one chapter in the morning and one chapter at night, "Zaytar yadayim yosef aymus amachshava teiva." Then he should, like with pure hands, he should increase with his strength and good thoughts, and do more. Vegam, so that if he can learn more than a chapter in the morning, chapter at night, according to his free times, so that's wonderful. Vegam shar hayayim kula sha'isik v'maysa matan. Then, when the person, the rest of the time, is working in his business. Yiyamachan l'shifta yizbarak v'nesina sestadaka. So then what happens is his business should also be a vehicle for conveying godliness. Like, for example, he's working in order to give tzedakah. This is his principle of utilization, which he talks about here. And he also talks about a greater length in chapter 37 coming up. That our way is not a way of denial. Our way is a way of utilization. That's the Jewish way.
Yes.
Not to live as hermits and removing oneself from the world, but by living in the world and utilizing it for a godly purpose. So then when a person goes to work, so why are they going to work? It's in order to somehow make the world a better place. Like you mentioned before, we talk about tikkun olam. Okay, so what is a better place? How do you make the world a better place? It's by making it more godly. And how do you make it more godly? It depends what profession you're in. Everybody can be working, just the profession itself. If a person is, installing security systems to make the world a better and safer place, so that makes it a more godly place. And whatever, a person could even be a rabbi to try and make it more godly.
Even yeah. Be a rabbi.
Yes. So
sometimes that works also.
Sometimes yeah. It works too. So the but then if a person, that would be in a way of b'chol derechecha de'ehu, and knowing you, in the ways that you work is the way that you know Hashem. Everything that you're doing is a way of conveying godliness. But okay, so let's say a person just has a job that they're doing it in order to make money. The only reason why this person has this job is in order to make money. And why is he making money? So now there comes a utilization. So the person's making money in order that they should be able to provide their family with a proper Jewish lifestyle which is befitting them, which includes a proper Jewish education and proper clothing and kosher food and the giving of tzedakah.
Yeah.
Now, everybody, I would love it if I could establish a charitable foundation and give away millions of dollars. That would be such a wonderful thing. I don't have the wherewithal to do that right now,
uh-huh.
But I still like to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, who's to decide if I'm going to have a charitable foundation that has the ability of giving away millions of dollars is not me. That's not up to me at all.
No, it's not.
That's up to God. So if God wanted to give me that kind of money, then I could do that sort of thing. The proof that God, that I'm not doing it, and I don't have it, is an indication that God doesn't want me to do it. That's not my... My avoid in life is
pretty fair indication.
Yes, it's not my avoid in life to be, managing charitable foundations.
Right.
So therefore, the money that I am making, I'm going to be giving the appropriate amount of tzedakah from it. This is an acceptable way of looking at it, because he says over here, for example. Shiti Magia Shuhu Midosav Shalakadosh Baruch Hu. He gives according to the measure which Hashem gave him. Mahu Rachum, etc. Or he says that, for example, that in pursuing his business affairs, he's following the attributes of Hashem, just like Hashem is merciful, etc. So you should be merciful. When it asks the question on the Gemara asks a question on the Pasuk, that you have to follow Hashem and you have to cleave to him. Mm. And says, how could you cleave to God? What's it? Give you God a big bear hug. What does that mean? So it says you have to follow in His path. You can't be a creator per se from nothing. Yeah. But we can follow Hashem's attributes. Just as Hashem is merciful, you should be merciful. Just as Hashem likes to do acts of kindness, you should like to do acts of kindness, etc. And that then makes the person's day a godly day, and the person is conveying godliness, and it now becomes this merkava, you might say, this vehicle for conveying godliness.
Right.
As it says in the Zohar, that Hashem, the kindness is Hashem's right hand. So when he's giving tzedakah, he's only giving a fifth. So you could say, he asked the question, he's going to work in order to give away 20% of his income. So that means that only 20% of his income has any type of holiness to it. So he says, that can't be. Why? Simple reason. Because the one-fifth elevates the other four-fifths to also be a dwelling place for God. Because how can you give 20% if you haven't got the other 80%? In other words, you made 100%.
Right.
And from that you're going to take 20%. If it were not for the other 80%, you wouldn't be able to give this 20%.
Correct.
So the 80% now also gets elevated by the fact that it becomes the vehicle for you giving the 20%.
Yeah.
Make sense, Dave? Yeah? You got it?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a very interesting switch on things.
It's
whatever it's going to take to facilitate.
Right, sure.
That, okay? So then when you're talking about Tikkun Olam, making the world a better place.
Right. It's a good piece.
So everything that a person is going to be utilizing, therefore, comes into this milieu.
That's good.
There's, in looking at the world and the populations of Jews, since we know that the Jews are chosen as to being, he talks about this later in chapter 37, the primary purifiers of the world. And you look, you'll see the Jews have been in a certain like pattern as to where Jews have lived over the last 3,300 years. And you'll see that the majority of Jews wind up living in within the borders of some superpower. I've yet to figure out what Poland had to do with anything over there. There were 3 million Poles before World War II, and World War II wasn't, and Poland was not a superpower, but still there were 3 million Jews living in Poland.
400 years ago, Poland was the main superpower in Europe.
They only fought one war that they ever won, and that was against the Swedes. But even then, you know, probably because it was one of the few united countries back then. Everything else was like city-states.
Right.
But I'm not going into the sociology behind Poland. I know there's a joke that could be made there, but I'm not going there. And wherever the Jews have left, they've left an empty shell in their wake. As we see with Egypt and Babylon and Iraq and Iran, Persia and Greece and Rome and Spain and Poland and Germany, and now we're getting the United States. Okay, so now, but there's a problem. What's the problem? The Jews are supposed to purify the entire world.
Right.
And it even goes so far as to say is that everybody has their portion in the world to come. You can divide up the world into a number of portions that are according to how many Jews there are. And each person has their portion in the world. You've got a lot of Asia that never had any Jews living there.
Right.
Jews just never lived in Asia.
Right.
Are we going to have to be exiled from the United States and then move to China en masse?
I'm hoping the 20% will carry the 80%.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm getting to. That's what I'm getting to. Oh, he's saying that's 20% of the world. Yes. Anyway, so no. Because let's say a person goes to work, okay, and they're going to work in order to facilitate all the things that we mentioned before.
Right.
How's that guy getting to work? He's
using a car.
He's using a car.
It came from American.
A lot of those parts of those cars are right. made in Asia.
That's true.
So by the fact that he's driving to work in order to be able to fill in the blank, like we said before about
yes,
it.
Yes, yes, yes.
So that then is elevating that portion that was required to make that car as well.
And everything else involved with it.
And everything else involved with it.
Right.
Okay? Everything that a person buys in China. Am I encouraging people to buy stuff in China? No, this is not a, should not be construed as a commercial endorsement for Chinese goods.
Thank you.
But when you use something made in China and you're using it to somehow serve Hashem, you are elevating the whole entire China. I think I should give you the other one.
And heaven knows it needs elevating.
And therefore we don't have to move to China. We talked about this before with the Baal Shem Tov's son-in-law and blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah in a place and thus alleviating the need for 300 families to go move to that place. It's a long story, we're not going to repeat it again. Mm. Okay? So the so it is our primary obligation in being here as Jews is to make the world a Dira B'Tachtein, a Dira B'Tachtein, a dwelling place for Hashem. And that Dira B'Tachtein, a dwelling place for Hashem, is made primarily through the Jewish people. That may sound like double talk, but it's not. If you think about it, we can play it back. And we are making this world, the entire world, a Machan Shifta Liyisbarach, a dwelling place for Hashem. What's the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is we get to Mashiach. That's the ultimate. What do we have left to do? Well, we can only rely on what people who are know better can answer. The Rebbe said in his last years that whatever really needs to be done is done. And Mashiach's not coming is an arbitrary decision on the part of the Almighty. And the Rebbe went so far as to say we can demand from the God already to send Mashiach.
Are there any arbitrary decisions with God?
You mean for no rhyme or reason, you might say? Well, for me, it's arbitrary at this point. Because you can't, there's
nothing that we perceive.
There's nothing that needs to be done. World is as good as it's going to get. It's not going to get any better than this. Okay? And at this point, what's happening is
of course, the internet.
It's just another tool. At this point, we're like one step forward, two steps back. As if you could use the example of, like, you have a vacuum cleaner that needs a filter. To be replaced, or that's got a hole in the filter would be even a better example. So you're picking up all the dirt. In the meantime, all the dirt that you just picked up is getting smashed out the back end of the vacuum cleaner.
Right, yes.
Okay, that's basically what's happening now. Because, okay, as the world is as good as it's going to get, there's a lot of people that are doing a lot of stuff wrong. So they're schmutzing up the good that it's gotten. So if Hashem will hurry up and forget about the vacuum cleaner bag, we don't want one of those. We don't want a new vacuum cleaner. We want a new house. Thank you. If you're going to use the analogy.
You like wooden floors anyway.
Yes. As it says, giving charity weighed equal to all of the karbanos. And we can even take it one step further. That tzedakah is equal to all of the mitzvahs all put together. Depends on which place you're quoting. Why is it karbanos? He's going to explain that. That's coming up right now. What do we mean when we say that the giving of tzedakah weighs equal to all the mitzvahs? Is that when a person, in order to be able to give charity, what did he have to do? He had to wake up in the morning and he had to go daven and he had to eat. And then he had to do whatever he did to get him to go to work. And he spent all day working. And then as he's all day working, he has to get paid. And then after that, so he's got to give his 20%, his 10%, his 20%, whatever it is, how many percent he wants to give. So what he's doing by giving away the tzedakah is he's giving away a piece of all of that. That whole process of how he got the money is all being given away.
Piece of life.
And even more than that is, since it's a mitzvah, so mitzvahs involve free choice. The guy could have said, I'm not giving tzedakah. I'm going to use this money for my own personal needs. And by the person now giving it away, the tzedakah, what is he doing? He's not just utilizing the 20%. He's giving away a portion of himself. Because let's say he could have bought, with that money that he's giving away, he could have bought food. And he would have eaten the food, and the food would have been incorporated into his body and become flesh and blood and bone, etc., etc. And the fact now that he doesn't have it, and he's not eating it, he's not consuming it. So it's not... So you could call it, he's like on the spiritual Weight Watchers. Because he's decreased his own body mass by never having it. You might say because he gave it away to charity. So when we say that tzedakah is equal to all the mitzvahs, it's that he is giving away a piece of himself.
That's right.
There are very few mitzvahs that people do with their entire body in an internalized way. Now, why do I say internalized way? Because, for example, you sit in a sukkah. When you sit in a sukkah, you're doing the mitzvah with your whole entire body.
Mm-hmm.
But that is an external thing because the sukkah is surrounding you.
Right.
Tzedakah, you could say alachil is matzah, for example, eating matzah. Because when a person eats the matzah, he's doing the mitzvah. And that does then become part of him. But you could maybe put a tracer on it, if science knew how to do it, that what happened to, you could somehow trace to say what happened to the matzah that the person ate.
Put an isotope in it or something.
Somebody, yeah, we'll start glowing. Somebody ate a piece of matzah. And some of it gets converted to glucose and goes to his brain. Other parts gets converted to fat and goes to his midsection. And a lot of it goes to waste and gets passed out. So waste means it wasn't utilized.
Right.
When a person gives, so that means that there's part of the mitzvah of alachilas matzah, which is an internalization of the mitzvah, which isn't being used.
Right.
When a person's giving tzedakah, he's giving away a part of himself that never was him. What part of him is he giving away? He's giving away a piece of his whole totality. It's not like you say, you know, this money I'm using now, so I could have bought something and that money would have gone to my stomach. So it's like me giving a piece of my stomach away, my body fat.
Mm.
No, it's not the way it works. It's every penny that he's giving away is corresponding to a penny's worth of his whole entire essence.
Right.
So when he's giving tzedakah, he's giving away his whole entire self. That's why we say that tzedakah is keneged kolam. In another place, we'll say Talmud Torah keneged kolam. We'll say Torah study equals to everything. In another place, we'll say Shabbos is equal to all the mitzvahs. In another place, we'll say tefillin is equal to all the mitzvahs. It depends on what you're talking about.
Right.
So, and this leads to me to believe that all the mitzvahs are equal to all the other mitzvahs at some point. Okay, combined.
They all have their mila.
Yeah. And that makes them unique.
Right.
And that there are 612 of these and one of those.
Right. That's why each one has its unique.
Each one is its own unique thing.
That's right.
Okay? Yeah. And this is the uniqueness of tzedakah. And so now, what's tzedakah got to do with karbanos? Kol karbanos, v'karbanos haya kol chai oilu la Hashem. What happens with karbanos? You take a... That what happens when a person wanted to have a relationship with Hashem, woke up this morning and said, I feel like I need to connect to God. He would take an animal and he would go up to the Har HaBayis and the Beis HaMikdash over there and they would slaughter it and he'd offer up a korban oila with all the accoutrements thereof and he would stand and he would watch a whole day pardon the lack of a better expression, the pageantry that went on in the Beis HaMikdash with all the miracles that happened on a regular basis.
I think it's a very mundane expression for the for what.
Yes, what really it was.
Going on, yeah.
It was a real show, but yes, not indeed. In that tone of voice.
You know, yeah, exactly.
And what happens now is he takes an animal, and the animal, if it's an oyla, for example, is totally, completely burned on the altar. Mm-hmm. That means that this animal, which is just a mundane animal, is totally and completely incorporated in godliness because it's completely and totally burned on the altar. Right. None of it gets thrown away for waste. Okay, you can say there's some ashes that are left over. So what happens with the ashes? You have Trumas Hadesh and you have the ash offering. It's all good. It's all part of it. It all becomes part of what the Beis HaMikdash was about.
Right.
And so when the person offers that animal, so the Kol Sameach Ali Yisra and Seilas Achad, and through also he elevates not only that animal. Let's say he's offering a sheep. So for him to offer up a sheep, what must there be in the world? Sheep.
Sheep.
There have to be sheep in the world. Why is there a species called sheep? So that this guy could offer this one offering. If there were no sheep and they did not exist, so this guy couldn't make this offering. So why is it that the whole entire species of how many tens of millions of sheep are there in the world? Hundreds of millions, who knows? Of sheep in the world is in order that this one sheep could be offered as a sacrifice. So that one sheep then elevates the entire species of sheep. The same way, like this, that's a pretty powerful thing. And for, so it's also
and the grass eats.
Yeah, and the plant, Ali the Eastern Silas Echad Belul B'Shemen. The vegetation is elevated through 5 pounds of flour and a pint of oil.
Right.
Because same thing. How is it that you're going to have flour? You got to have wheat. And so this bit of wheat, flour, elevates the whole entire genre of, he wants to say, not just wheat, but the whole entire vegetable kingdom.
This is coming on to say the prophets like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov elevate the whole nation of Israel, and Israel elevates the whole world.
Through that way, that's what he wanted to say. That's the beginning of the chapter, yes.
Can we say the salt elevates the mineral world?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's why it was on there. Okay. That's why he says kulu, etc.
Yeah.
And he says, well, what about the other? He's still worried about those other 80%. So what do you do with the other 80%? So with that, so he goes and he buys stuff, he buys his needs, and then when he uses them for this purpose of studying Torah and davening and doing other mitzvahs, so that 80% also gets elevated. Guy buys a nice suit. What does he need a nice suit for? So that he has something to wear to be presentable when he's in shul.
Sure, right.
So then the money that he used, the money that he made, right, which is not part of the 20%, right, now can get elevated.
Right. Well, purposes. I mean, is the purpose to elevate the 80%?
I mean, the purpose is to elevate the 100%.
100%.
The 20% is easy because he gave that away to tzedakah.
Right.
Okay, the 80% we say facilitates that because now it's also elevated, because how did you get the 20% if you didn't have the 80%? But now he's going to say, and even the 80% itself can be elevated to holiness on its own by utilization for making the world a better place.
You know, someone's like, I could, sacrifice all the sheep to Hashem. No, Hashem just needs one sacrifice.
That's correct. Hashem doesn't need all the sheep. Hashem needs the one.
The same.
Okay, the one that you offered with a proper feeling. Yes.
Okay. Proper same with the tzedakah.
Same with the tzedakah. Hashem doesn't want you to give away 100%. Right. There is a law that says you can't give away 100% of your income to charity.
Become impoverished and become a problem.
Because then you become a problem in the community.
Right.
It says Al Yavazo is Yosef Mechamesh. Don't squander more than 20%, which indicates to me that more than 20% is called squandering. Squandering is not a nice word.
No, it's not.
Squandering means wasting it.
Yes, it does.
I'm giving it to charity. Yeah, and in process becoming a charity case yourself.
Right. So what? You may not want to run this gambit. This may be something that will to be dealt with at some other time. But it's It's 20% of what in our day and time?
After taxes.
Why?
Why?
Yes, truthfully.
Because, well, first of all, the Almighty knows how much money you got. Okay? It's after taxes because the...
The reason for the why is because I thought on this a while.
Because it's not considered yours. If the government takes it off the top, you never saw it. It was never yours.
Yeah, but here's the thought process, and you'll tell me where I'm wrong. Even though our government squanders our money.
That's not your business.
That's not my business. The point is that the taxes were for the benefit of the people as a whole.
You want to say that should be your tzedakah?
No, not at all. God forbid. What I wonder is, and I want to go back to those times. I have to wonder: did people get tzedakah from their whole harvest? And if the king asked for taxes, they paid that separately. And the only reason
because this goes all back to that. If a person had a field and had 100 bushels, and the king took 20 bushels,
yeah.
So then the Kayane didn't get 1/50th of 100, he got 1/50th of 80.
Oh, is that right? That's a fact?
Yep.
Okay.
Taxes were considered a credit towards it, yes.
Really?
To lower the amount of tzedakah that has to be given.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Because I've always wondered, because the truth is, supposedly we give away our taxes to the government, especially in our quote-unquote republic.
Yes,
for the benefit of all of the people, for the standing army to do all those things.
Correct.
So in essence, you're getting benefit from that also.
Okay.
And so.
So you want to say that you shouldn't?
I wonder if it's not 20% from the whole.
As if you had like hired a policeman to watch your Pinkerton to watch your house.
Yeah, exactly.
You couldn't declare that from the top.
Yeah, it's not my fault that they squandered. That's neither here nor there. But the money still was meant for
there
that.
Are
so
things,
I have to wonder about that.
There are things that you can consider charitable donations. For example, any money that you give to an adult child.
Hmm.
Is considered
tzedakah.
Because it says you should take care of your own first.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any money that you spend in school fees when you're for a child who's over six.
Ah, that's interesting.
Can be taken off Meiser.
Taken off Meiser. That I knew. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Age six, because at age six they're ready. They listen. They know how to read.
Yeah.
They know how to do a little chumash. They can daven over there. Let the kid go get a job.
Right.
So the fact that you're going to keep them in school, so that's already a tzedakah to them.
So anyway, that was the only point of the question. It was, but 20% of what?
Yep.
Yeah.
There is an excellent book. I don't know. There's a book out by Ari Scroll, which is called called Charity.
Yeah.
It has a green cover, so it's not bad. But a better book, as you can find it, is called Meiser Kesufim. Which has got a red book and it's got 10 coins on the front.
Is it available in English?
One coin, which is sort of like painted red. In English, it's called Meiser Kesufim. They just translated, yes.
Okay.
I used to have it, but it's grown legs.
I'll check it.
I have no idea.
I'll check Amazon. Maybe on Amazon, maybe?
Yeah, I would say that is the best compendium on tzedakah.
Yeah?
That there is, yes.
I'd like to see.
I don't remember the author.
I'd like to read it. I definitely like it.
Yeah, I don't remember the author. There may be a copy existent. There used to be a copy existent in the Chabad of North Oak Park Library.
Yeah?
And that's going back even before. I think I wouldn't say Northgate, but I would say definitely say when the JCC they had a copy of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Meiser Kesufim.
Yes, Meiser is in like taking a tenth.
Tenth Kesufim.
Kesufim is the plural of Kesef.
Kesef.
Money.
Money. Okay.
Tithing money would be the translation of the book.
Very good. Okay. Yeah. I will.
So in the time that the guy's eating and drinking and then going and learning, so it's also elevating the 80%. All these different degrees of simcha that we've been speaking about since chapter 26. It leaves no place for a person to be considering himself, discussing an abominable, all those things that he said, at the time when a person's happy. which is basically the source where the Rebbe in 1985 or 86 said that when it comes to doing the things about fasting and doing cheshbein and nefeshes and all that type of stuff, that's not for our generation. For sure,
not in stock, but you could get it used on Amazon.
Okay. Yeah. Cyril Dumm is the author.
Cool.
$23.99, not in stock. Order now, and we'll deliver it when available, which might be never.
Yeah. So you could get it used from.
It's got one used. How many?
What do I care? I always buy used.
Okay.
I used in good condition. I always buy used.
Okay, thank you for that.
Good.
New devices.
Okay. So, we were just talking about. Anyway, so the Rebbe said that our generation is not a time for planned for depressions. This is how we started this whole section. Chapter 26, which is the beginning of this whole section, says that if you got a problem and you're feeling depressed, so put it on the calendar and you'll get depressed about all the sins that you did in the course of your lifetime. And then while you're being depressed about all the sins that you did in a lifetime, so you could be depressed about this also.
Right.
And then go weiter and get out of it.
Right, okay.
That was the advice. Here the Rebbe is saying, don't bother.
Yeah.
If you're always happy, then you don't have to worry about being depressed.
Yeah, don't go there
for. What's getting depressed when you get depressed? This is always one of those questions. In fact, this comes up again later in chapter 30, 35, 36, 37, 38.
Yeah.
The question comes up is when you're doing a mitzvah and you like doing it,
yeah.
What part of you is doing the mitzvah? Is it your godly soul? Is it your animal soul?
Yes.
Okay.
Just yes.
It's not so simple. Because the animal that we have likes to, our animals are propelled by pleasure.
Correct.
That's our modus operandi.
Right.
Pleasure doesn't always have to be grub.
Right.
So if you find doing mitzvahs to be pleasurable, so what's doing it? And of course, the Alter Rebbe says in chapter 37 that the soul doesn't need to get fixed. The soul doesn't need to connect. The godly soul doesn't need to make a connection between it and Hashem.
Right.
It's a chelik elikamim al mamish.
Right.
It's a portion of Hashem.
Right.
So it isn't doing the mitzvahs. What's doing the mitzvahs?
Right.
So you just happen to like doing the mitzvahs. It's a nefesh Bahamas. Nefesh HaChayun, as he calls it sometimes, which makes it sound a little bit nicer. The vitalizing soul.
Yes, indeed.
Which is vitalizing your body, which is keeping your body alive. Yeah. And the godly soul is just kind of like trying to push it to go in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah.
So the we have nice animals is basically what it is. So the Friedrich Rebbe says in Lakutzi Diborim that you have people that by nature they like doing people like doing good things. It says in the Gemara that, for example, you don't have to ask somebody if you can buy their tefillin. You come into shul, you see somebody's tefillin there, you can put them on without asking him. Why? Because people like doing mitzvahs with their things, especially if it's not costing him anything.
Sure.
What did it cost him for you to put on his tefillin? It didn't cost him anything. And here, somebody is doing the mitzvah of putting on tefillin.
Right.
So you don't have to ask.
Right.
Okay? So I like doing mitzvahs with my money. Okay? That's the key part of the expression over there. I like doing mitzvahs with my money. What is that? What's the like? The godly soul doesn't relate to the physical world at all. When you're sitting down to eat matzah by the night of the Seder, and you take a bite of that first bite of matzah, and you go, yum, your godly soul really could care less if you're using Kfar Chabad matzah, or Ukrainian matzah, or New York matzah, whole wheat, white, spelt, oat, whatever it is. Your godly soul really doesn't care. Has no interest at all to the godly soul, because to the godly soul, Shmura oat and Kfar Chabad white are all the same thing, because what's important is the godliness that's being conveyed by doing the mitzvah.
The connection, right.
That's what's conveyed.
Right.
Is there any more of a hitter to use one over the other? When you're talking about Shmura Masa, I should hope not. I should hope that it's the same hitter using this one that costs a little bit more than the other one, and this one that tastes a little bit better than that one. But as far as the actual performance of the mitzvah goes, the godly soul is saying, it's fine. It's all good.
Yeah.
My animal soul, however, on the other hand,
yeah,
does not like the taste of Kfar Chabad matzah. And so I don't use Kfar Chabad matzah. Why don't I use Kfar Chabad matzah? It's the same mitzvah. It's no more of a hitter. I could say the reason why I have big tefillin is because I'm making a better connection with Hashem than if I had small tefillin.
No, probably not.
But I'm not making a better connection with Hashem if I'm using Borough Park matzah over Kfar Chabad matzah. What is it then that is propelling me to spend the extra $4 a pound, $5 a pound for the Borough Park matzah? It is my Nefesh HaBahamas.
Correct.
It tastes that much better. As I think also, I have Arba Kosis. Okay, I could get by Arba Kosis with a $3.99 bottle of Ketem Concord. I don't think I would make it through the night.
Yuck. But, yeah.
But it does the job.
It sure does, you bet.
Okay, the second Seder that I made in my mother's house. So my mother lives in New Jersey, so we had to go into Crown Heights to get supplies.
Right. Yeah.
We didn't have to go into Crown Heights. We could have gone to other neighborhoods, but
whatever,
since it was Lubavitchland, we went to Crown Heights. So we went to Eli Eber to get wine. And even back then, in 1978, when the kosher wine market was just coming into play.
Right, yeah.
People were just getting out of drinking Gonzales Langer wine. Okay, which was, it blew my pancreas right out of my body, that stuff. Just totally petrified my pancreas. So I go out into Eli Eber's store over there, and I tell him, listen, Eli, don't you have any better wine than this sludge that you sell in these flagon bottles? And he says, oh, a connoisseur. So he goes in the back of it, and he takes out a bottle of wine. It's a Cabernet, it's the first Cabernet Sauvignon I ever saw in my life.
Wow.
Okay? He says it's $35 a bottle.
Whoa.
I said to the guy,
back then,
I'm not buying it. So today it would be like an $80 bottle of wine.
Yeah.
I said, I'm not buying it. And he said, why not? I said, because of one of two reasons. If it costs me $35 a bottle and it tastes like garbage, so then I wasted $35.
Right.
If, however, it's a $35 bottle of wine and it tastes like it should be $35, then I'm never going to want to drink anything else, and I can't afford it.
Right.
So don't get me started on it.
Yeah.
So, is there more of a mitzvah? It does say in Shulchan Aruch that you should have a better wine.
Yes, it does.
For Arba Kosis.
Uh-huh.
And it's not just, I am not going to say that it's not like 2x2 tefillin, the Ketem Concord.
Uh-uh.
Okay. But it's my animal soul that says, I'm not going to put Ketem Concord even anywhere in my house, never mind in my body. And so we go through and we get the better ones.
Right.
Why? Because they taste good. Now, taste is something that's totally in your mouth.
Right.
And which means it's an expression of your body and animal soul. So therefore, what is it that wants to be doing this mitzvah? Not my godly soul.
The animal soul.
It's my animal soul. My animal soul is motivated by the pleasure that it's going to have from doing this mitzvah.
Right.
Which is a wonderful thing.
Right.
And he talks about that in chapter 37 and 38, that makes us a Markava. That makes us just like Abraham. And similarly, it is brought down in the Zohar about this, that b'chia tekiya b'libar mesitra da, v'chedva tekiya b'libai mesitra da. Crying is implanted on one side of the heart, and happiness is planted in the other side of the heart.
Mm.
So when you're talking about serving Hashem, the expression, our modus operandi is, ivdu es Hashem b'simcha, serve Hashem with joy.
Mm.
And then everything gets done, and everything gets done better.
Yeah.
And what about, however, my depressing thoughts? Okay, so take in your spare time, read chapter 26 through 34. get rid of the depressing thoughts, right, and Vaitakagangan, and continue being a happy person.
Right.
To be continued. Chapter 35 next week. God willing. Yeah.